Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and
Ari Odaya. Ari, thank you so much for joining us here today. Yes, Ari Odaya. So we have been trying to do this for some time. And you, I get so much inspiration from you, Ari, because you are like being a vanguard and being a disruptor. And I love that. You founded a legal tech company called SID Technologies, S-I-I-D. Mm-hmm. And you started that up a few years ago. And the whole story behind it, I saw an article about you on LinkedIn and reached out to you. But would love for you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we'll start the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. My startup journey and my startup and product journey was inspired by the murder of George Floyd. After taking some time to dive deep and educate myself on the history and current state of the criminal justice system, you know, one of the things that I learned was how really truly broken the system was, who was mostly impacted by this brokenness, and how incredibly difficult it was to get a fair shake if you're poor, if you're economically challenged, Black, brown, or immigrant. In the United States, access to free legal counsel is a fundamental right. Most people don't realize that public defenders are outnumbered, often 200 cases to one attorney. They are equally set up to fail as their clients, to be quite honest. They're grossly under-resourced. When you have as little as 7 minutes to prepare for any given case, the best you can do for your client is negotiate a plea deal, which is often what they're doing. And their counterparts on the other side of the aisle have all the resources and technology to their disposal. Unlike most of our competitors, we're building for this space. We're building for public defenders. We want to enable them with the insights they need to ensure due process is what we're trying to do.
And I think that concept of you have a right to public defender, I think people really may not realize how poorly resourced some of those attorneys are. Now, an attorney who goes to law school and they graduate, CIPRA bar exam, they could have student loan debt that is significant, anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000. And it's not uncommon for many public defenders, their salary to be, what, maybe $50,000 or something like that? Yeah. Very, very low. And they have no support staff, right? Like it's not the illustrious lawyer lifestyle that people may realize.
Yeah, exactly. They often don't have a dedicated paralegal, or they're lucky they might have an intern or two. They don't have support. So it's almost like they're siloed. They're independent in a sense. They're like teachers. I look at them as teachers. Teachers are poorly compensated and they're under-resourced. So they have to bring their own chalk and markers and paper and pencil. And they even have to disperse that paper and pencil to their students as well. So that's how defenders are. They're grossly under-resourced and grossly underpaid.
And there, if anyone's interested in learning more about it, I love watching documentaries, and there's one called Gideon's Army. Have you ever watched it, Ari?
No, but I've heard of it.
There is a Supreme Court decision that created the right to public defender, and I think it's maybe U.S. v. Gideon or something like that. The Gideon name comes from the case style of that case. Mm-hmm. And it follows some public defenders, I believe, maybe in Mississippi. And they talk about what that docket is like. to your point, they may have 200 clients on a active clients in a given stretch of time, no support staff, nothing. And they're trying their best to live their lives as well and give their clients the best defense possible with very limited resources. It's a huge challenge.
It's a very huge challenge, and it leads to our current state of case backlog, which quite frankly costs the taxpayers billions annually. Mm-hmm. Because the longer it takes for a public defender to get to a case and process a case, the longer potentially that person may be sitting in jail, right? And for each day they sit in jail, it's $120.50. So that adds up how many folks are sitting in jail waiting for their public defender because they can't afford bail. So as a taxpayer, you flip the bill for that.
It's a very layered conversation, isn't it? So Now, what I find very interesting and inspiring about what you're doing beyond who you're really trying to support, there are many conversations right now about disruptive AI and conversations about access to justice with some of this disruptive AI. But it's kind of flipped to maybe your experience where there's like more super cutting edge AI, like generative AI, and who will have access to it because it will be more expensive. It is the newest technology out there. But your organization, you're leveraging AI that maybe has AI technologies that's been around, and you're really focused on keeping costs at a level for those target clients like public defenders. Is that right, Yuri?
That's correct. And much of our competitors are building and solving for the big law corporate space, right? Because the sales cycle is shorter, there's more money there. But I think investors and folks are missing an opportunity to not just make a difference, but the government space can be quite lucrative. Once you're solving, currently the United States is spending, $5 billion annually on public defense services. That's a huge amount, right? That's not nothing to laugh at. That's an opportunity. Clearly an opportunity there.
I want to dig into that a little bit more, but I do want to talk a little bit back to your origin story. You came into legal tech not having worked in legal tech, and that in and of itself, I think, is a huge challenge to undertake because legal tech is very, very niche. It's very niche in a very niche area. Cool. There are people who've been around for a while. And you come from, if I recall correctly, maybe a marketing background. Is that right? So I'd love to hear what it was like for you entering into legal tech.
So my background, I come from a digital marketing space, specifically from the entertainment world. So my superpower is creative strategy, dreaming up of things and bringing them to life. So that's my strength. I do have a background in tech initially when I was much younger. I did get certified, Microsoft certification as an MCSD, which never went anywhere because I was a 19-year-old Black girl in Minnesota and no one was willing to hire me to do anything. So I ended up pivoting into the entertainment space where I was able to navigate that space a little easier. So full circle back after a stint as a digital marketer and building my skills and having that background in tech, that education in tech was very helpful in my journey in the entertainment space, believe it or not. Social media, I picked that up fairly quickly. It was very easy for me building microsites and various different things for films and different projects. It was very easy. Post-production, it was very easy because I was able to pick up the software. That background was helpful for me even in that space. So pivoting to the tech space where I initially had started in life was easy in terms of picking the information up, understanding. I did a whole lot of my own research in 2020 and beyond, just teaching myself and better understanding data science. And data science was already something that I had already been implementing through data analytics for social media and understanding that audience analysis. So it wasn't such a, it wasn't so far-fetched to me. But the legal tech space, the startup space, the tech startup space, that has been a challenge because I don't fit the mold at the intersection of gender and race. At the, I don't have your fancy Ivy League background. I'm not an alum of any of those Ivy League schools. I just don't fit into that mold. And I don't have a CS degree, you know. So when I'm speaking to folks, it's, okay, where do you get off? You know, and that's the approach I often come up against. It's like, where do you get off? Because who are you to speak on this and speak on that? But as I, it's interesting, as you speak to folks a little bit more, and you start to understand that they know as much as you do about the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest here.
Right.
It's emerging. Oh, there's a lot that's wrong with AI right now in terms of who's building it, the data sets that are being used, garbage in, garbage out. And when you have a homogenous group building and leading the deployment of such a technology, I mean, there's tons of risks. We've seen that happening with algorithmic bias within some of these models. So when you have someone like me that doesn't fit into the standard formula of a legal tech startup founder or even a tech startup founder, I bring diversity, and not just in the fact that I'm, not just my gender and my race. When we talk about diversity and thought.
Well, and something is striking me. Your technology is very focused on audio video content. I'm not going to say it's exclusively that, because that content tends to play an important evidentiary role in litigation. And that is a huge blind spot in traditional e-discovery platforms. It's huge. We are very, because in large corporate e-discovery, corporate litigation, it's very document heavy, very text heavy. And those tools repeatedly have, that over the last 10, 15 years, have been built on a text heavy logic. And media content is a huge blind spot. And we're starting to feel the pain of that because we're seeing more and more multimodal data sources. We're seeing more people sending voice chats. We're seeing more now transcript Zoom calls or Teams calls. And the fact that you, being an outsider in some ways, right, not being entrenched in legal tech, you were able to approach this from a very, I see a problem that needs to be solved and I'm going to solve it without even realizing it is a blind spot for so many other areas in e-discovery. I think that it perfectly highlights the importance of bringing that diversity of thought into play, of course, in addition to other forms of diversity. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love seeing your product out there. I think it's really exciting for me.
I mean, I saw what was happening. I was in Minneapolis when the trial for George Floyd was taking place, and how they, I mean, the conversations around the different footages from the street cam to the body cam to the iPhone footage to the dash cam and all the different footages and the different cameras that captured those footages, and and having them piece it together, and the amount of work that it went into piecing that together, and the amount of money that was spent to do that. I was like, okay, wow, all right. And I was already exploring AI, looking at how Grammarly can be used to help folks in the marketing. The same natural language processor that Grammarly was using can be used to by folks in the marketing space to become more aware of their unconscious bias. How can we use the same technology to stitch videos like this together and then do a layer of sentiment analysis on it, right? I mean, if it's a question of how many times did he say, I can't breathe, like really, can we do that quickly? And does it have to be such an expenditure to do that?
Yeah. And for the audience who may not be aware, in traditional e-discovery tools, to watch a video or listen to an audio file, traditionally, the process is an attorney watches it like in full. So if it's a 30-minute video, that's half an hour that an attorney is billing to listen to it, but probably more because they may go back and re-listen to things. You can kind of get around it by having that machine transcribed and then included again as a text file to fall into our traditional text-based workflows. But you're getting something completely different. Can you talk about that a little bit more about what exactly your tool is doing?
We're leveraging AI to expedite that analysis of video. And we are producing automated transcriptions of the video, as well as a layer of sentiment. And that sentiment is used to flag key moments within the videos, key moments that one can use as could potentially be evidence in your argument that you can use in your argument, right? And it helps you move through the video fairly quickly. We had a federal public defense attorney use the tool to cut her discovery time from 40 to 12, right?
Wow.
And which is huge. And It was critical because video was turned over to her. Again, it was about 48 hours of video that was turned over to her 24 hours or 2 days before she was actually supposed to be in court.
Wow.
And as we talked about, you also have other cases, right? So If you're supposed to be in court and this new evidence was just turned over to you, and it was hours upon hours of video that you're supposed to watch, and watch for what? And like, what are you looking? There's just so much there that you have to get through. And using a tool to expedite that process, flagging key moments, getting an idea of sentiment from that video, having transcripts that's generated and that you can print out and take with you, being able to provide clips of the specific time point in time where, you know, which proves or disproves whatever your case is, right? Your argument is. And being able to do that quickly in a short period of time. If you think about it, 40 hours to 12 hours, you still have, in 12 hours, you still have half your day.
Yeah.
To work on other things, right? Our goal is to within that 7 minutes to an hour that an attorney has to prepare, is to give them a snapshot of the case, all the relevant insights that they'll need to put together a strong argument and possibly help them generate that argument.
Right, because I know you and I have talked about this before. What can frequently happen, given the high volume of their docket, their limited time to work on each matter, their strategy for many of their clients may be to encourage a plea deal.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the time or the resources to maybe look at all the evidence. So if this acts as a mechanism to potentially identify exculpatory evidence and prevent plea deal, as the best option, that is access to justice right there with AI, right. Not lack of it because of AI. And I think that's incredibly, again, compelling.
Thank you. Exactly. Well,
what's been the reception like from public defenders?
I mean, it's been great reception from public defenders. We have a pilot that we're planning on launching this winter. We're having follow-up conversations with offices. We've established a really strong partnership with the National Association for Public Defense, who have been great to us. And so the reception has been great. The challenge with public defense offices is, again, they are under-resourced. So being able to make the argument internally, because again, they don't necessarily have a CIO, some of them, but they see the value. Some of these conversation is helping them understand and doing demo and doing these pilots with them so that they have an opportunity to use it, prove the value that the tool brings to their workflow.
And are you talking to both federal public defenders, state, like just the whole?
Yeah, federal, state, and we're also speaking with legal aid associations too, organizations. Yeah.
Great, great. Well, I mean, I know you talked about that one attorney, that public defender who said you took my turnaround time from 40 to 12. Have you had any other big wins like that from your clients?
We've had wins where they've also identified, and so it was not the intention of the tool. We're not there yet with the tool yet, but being able to identify implicit bias in the dialogue. And I'm myself learning from a legal aspect what that looks like, what that sounds like, right? One particular case, it was a body cam footage where a police officer was coaching a alleged victim, and he was telling the victim that they didn't need to worry because the defendant was just a homeless drug addict. Right now, because someone's homeless doesn't necessarily make them a drug addict. There's some profiling there, and it was a person of color, and it was a person of color with mental health disabilities. And that mental health disability was seen as a substance abuse issue rather than what it was. The attorney was able to use that. It was a dialogue that our AI flagged because the officer was using derogatory terms. And the attorney was able to use that clip to have the case, I believe, dismissed. And there was a number of other things that the coaching of the victim, you know, the profiling. There were other dialogue that implied that the alleged victim was actually the aggressor. This is a person of color who had mental health disabilities, who was also homeless. The person was at a disadvantage. And the appalling thing is that they were concocting it despite the body cam, like that captured it. And again, which is why they turned over this piece of evidence like last minute with very little time. And if the attorney didn't have our tool, she may never have been able to even move through the video to identify that dialogue or find it or use it. It would be a police situation.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That is, I mean, and that's really right. Why you started this organization up, your company and this technology. Incredibly inspiring, Erie. I would love to hear, in this last section, I'd love to hear more about what you have planned for the future, because it sounds like you have some pilot programs planned out, any other developments you might have.
We recently got accepted into Microsoft's solution partner program, so we're really excited about that, which means we're planning on migrating to Azure and deploying in their marketplace. So super excited going into the new year. That's what the plan is. And my big delusional plan, grander plan, is really in 5 years or a little more, I see CID becoming the leading technology platform for public defenders, similar to how the Epic system became the standard record management solution for hospitals, right? So using having our tool being used to process and manage at least over 70% of criminal cases in the U.S. is what I envisioned.
I'll be cheering you on from the sidelines. I, again, find your inspiration for starting this very inspiring and your tenacity to keep at it, because I have no doubt it's very challenging for all the reasons and more that we discussed, I'm sure. Yeah. So the fact that you're persevering regardless is, again, incredibly inspiring. And I'm, as someone in the legal profession, I'm glad you're making your way to the table on your own, because we need people like you.
Thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast and you following my progress. I appreciate hearing from folks that are in the legal space like yourself, attorneys that are sharing how this tool could really change the game for so many in so many different ways. So I really, it's always great to hear that I'm on track and that this tool will be really impactful. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I would love for you, just as a closing comment, to share something you would like to share with the audience, something you are looking forward to in the next year, or just a key thoughtful takeaway for the audience.
I think key thoughtful takeaway for the audience. This might be more to myself than the audience, but I think just keeping... stay hopeful. We're in very, very challenging times and times where I've really questioned standards of freedom and equality. I really, really question what that means for us. And I think that in this difficult time where it's a huge question mark for me, that staying hopeful and keeping the positive in sight, whether that positive has taken place in the past, is currently taking place, keep that at the forefront, because it's really easy to become hopeless in this time that we're in right now. And with this work that I'm doing, I have no room for hopelessness.
And hopelessness, I think, is the worst mental state to be in. I hope anyone out there who's maybe had a rough year, it's been a challenging year for some, multiple years, don't give up hope. Keep going. Your feelings are valid, but don't let that dissuade you from your path forward. So, all right. Well, very inspiring as always. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. I know I learned so much from you, and I have no doubt my audience did too. And to my audience, thank you so much for joining this episode of Cassie and...